Okay, when we were putting together the program, one of the topics that came up was succession planning and business planning in general, but succession planning in particular because of industry occurrences lately. And you know, it just planning's a good thing to be able to do and benefit from. So I've known Wayne Bailey for 25 years. I've been doing financial planning with him for that long, and so I called him up and I said, Wayne, who do you know? Can you give me a recommendation for someone that does good financial planning for businesses and business owners? And he says, yes, by the way, we do that. Glad you called. I know the perfect guy. So I am pleased to have the opportunity to introduce Wayne Bailey and John Krockenberg from Wells Fargo Financial Planning. Wayne?
Thanks, Bob. So we said we were together for 25 years. You didn't say that I first met him when I was 7 years old. First of all, we are delighted and grateful to have the opportunity to be with you today. We are from Florida, and there's a little storm out in the Atlantic Ocean that John and I are trying to make a 125 flight with Southwest to get back to Orlando. As an overview, we're going to be here for an hour. I'm going to speak for a few minutes about high altitude on asset allocation and expectations of what David talked to you about, the lobbyists talked to you about regarding the election, and then Envision, which is our financial planning tool that Bob referenced about financial planning. Then I'm going to turn it over to John, who will speak more specifically about succession planning. The genesis of this was, you know, you all lost a member, a couple of members, and planning and being in place, as tragic as that can be, certainly makes it much, much smoother and more efficient for transition for the benefit of the business and for the families as well. So that's kind of the overview of why we're here, and we're grateful to have the opportunity to share. We've given you a kit, and one of the things in the kit talks about my team. I've been in the same town for 35 years, and I have clients from Seattle to upstate New York and all places in between. So this gives a little bit of information about our team. It references, I told Bob, that if you live in Montana or Tennessee or a state where we might not be licensed to help you now, it's an easy fix because we have the capacity to turn a switch and become licensed in your state if you'd like us to give you a no obligation and a complimentary idea of planning tools that we can offer, which is the one I want to talk about here is Envision, which we have. This is a Wells Fargo advisory program. You might go to an individual planning or a planner, so to speak, who might charge you as much as $1,200 or $1,500 for the production of a document as extensive as this. This comes as a value added. And we're just delighted to be able to provide that for you. In your kit, John will reference in his part of the presentation a checklist, and then my assistant Beth has placed in your kit a return envelope that'll come back to us. Confidentially, we would be able to supply you with the information that you might be looking for. So Wells Fargo Advisors is a wholly owned subsidiary of the Wells Fargo Corporation. This advisory business that I'm in is I run my own practice within the firm. Our advisory division is 125 years old. We work independently and have clients. In my case, I have about 100 families that I work with across the country. The Envision, I talked a little bit about. It just goes through and prepares a formal report that analyzes your current circumstances and how you're set up for coverage of insurance and your overall asset allocation. One of the things that we talked about at dinner last night, Bob and JC and John and I went to dinner and we talked with David Crow about Washington and the election, and I'm going to get into that in just a second. But if you don't know David very well, he sure is an interesting fellow who's been around and lives up in McLean, Virginia, and he's got some I'm sure he would be happy to share over a cocktail some interesting stories that he shared with us last night about what's going on up there. So with that, let me just kind of give you an overview of our expectations of the market and why we think that there is not reason for concern with regard to the growth of both of the stock market and the bond market, but with regard to interest rates. When you look at where we were as an economy in 1999, there really were a couple of bubbles that have happened since then. One was the tech bubble in 99, where people were not hoarding cash, which we are today because of concerns about the election. But the last two bubbles burst, and the first one was 99. Consumers thought that the internet stocks were just going to continue to be growing in value, and it would just go on and on and on. But as we know, they got so leveraged, there were no buyers left, and the bottom fell out. In 2007, if you remember, just before the 2008 recession, people were owning multiple real estate investments. I mean, you could buy a house and flip it in 3 or 4 months and make a lot of money. So your existing home, many people were taking their homes and almost looking on them as an ATM, taking the cash out, buying a house, flipping it over. And we know that what happened there was they got so leveraged up, as did the banks, that it was a perfect storm and there was an implosion. Today, we're in a different circumstance. The economy is driven, 68% of the economy is driven by consumers. And the consumers are hoarding cash due to skepticism about the markets. Markets never crash or fall off at the time at which people are so concerned that they were about to have a recession. So we don't see the market falling off at this point when there's all of this cash. The Fed has said they're not going to raise rates. And regardless of what happens, today is very much different from 99 and 2007. The consumers are healthy. Corporations are the same. They're very cash rich. And they drive about 12% of the economic growth. But bull markets don't end on skepticism, which is where we are today. So there's been a shift into bonds and utility stocks and consumer staples. But after a recession comes recovery. The street expects about a 9%. When I say the street, the major firms on Wall Street, Goldman Sachs, Wells Fargo, Morgan Stanley, Merrill Lynch, go down the list, the average expectation is about up 9% over the next 12 months. Leadership has changed. Since June 30th of this year, technology, energy, financials, and industrials. On top of that, the emerging markets have in essence been an area of recession the last couple of years and now showing signs of some life. So that's kind of an overview we expect. I'll get to a very specific and hard number as to what we expect by the end of the year. Flipping over to the conversation we had last night with David as far as the election is concerned, everyone in this room, I'm sure, as it is with my client base and everybody I talk to, is concerned about the election. And we don't believe that one person, whether it's Trump or Clinton, makes as much difference as you're being led to believe by the media. The government leads you to believe this. They want to tell you that the control of the entire economy can be the main resource and key to success, and we don't believe that. What drives the economy, as I've already said, is the U.S. consumer, which drives 68% of the economy. So when you look at companies like Procter & Gamble, McDonald's, Starbucks, Walmart, Verizon, they'll still be in business long after this election cycle and will continue to raise dividends as they have year over year over year. 5 years from now, there will be more people in the world. The emerging communities around the world will be buying more consumer products. Dividends will continue to rise and the market will continue to rise. I know that we have swings of 200 and 300 and 400 points some days. You go, oh my God, but it's at 18,500 on the Dow and 2160 on the S&P. So when you see a swing of 180 points, it's only 1%. I mean, you'd have to be at 1,800 swing to get a 10% swing off the Dow. So it's just, it looks worse than it is, but because we've reached such a high pinnacle in terms of the valuation of the Dow Jones average. Then let's go to specifics. Our price target and the street's price target for 12/31 could be as high as a 15% return from present levels after we get through November and the election, and we could end up the S&P, which is at 2160, close to 2500. 15% return from here. Lots and lots of cash sitting on the sidelines. People are concerned about that. So that's just kind of a high altitude of why people have cash, what we see with forward earnings, and about the election. John is going to talk more specifically now and really get down in the weeds about succession and planning and how you protect your businesses, because we recognize through conversation with Bob that most of the companies here are family-owned, privately held companies. You, like us, and us, like you, value our businesses because we've grown them by taking extraordinarily great care of our clients. And therefore, you've now got the second generation coming in, and then you're working with third generation, in some cases, of buyers, and you supply to those people. So it's all about making sure that your business continues to run smoothly if you should become ill or were to pass away. We also, John is going to talk a little bit about that. He'll also talk about ways that we protect and save in your employees, your key employees, with ESOPs and Keyman and all of that. So with that, for the next 20 or 25 minutes, John's going to talk about business succession planning. He is a partner to me, a resource to me in my practice. And he's terrific, and he has got 25 years as a certified financial consultant, which is a high designation for planning for business succession and all the things I just mentioned. He just lives over in Ormond Beach, about 25 miles away from me, and so with that, he is a Wells Fargo advisory employee, and with that, I'm going to introduce John Krockenberg to speak to you about this matter.
It's great to be with you all today. Sorry we have a distraction here with what we have oncoming in Florida. So appreciate you understanding us trying to keep this within our timeline. My role is titled as a wealth insurance specialist. One of 35 in the country in Wells Fargo Advisors and dedicated to our high net worth and business clients. Being a chartered financial consultant, I work with all elements of the business, estate, the retirement plans, the attorneys, the CPAs, the families, the children. It's almost like a Mr. Gadget sometimes. And then, oh, by the way, when there's some insurance solutions, that's where I am a specialist. So I'm going to touch on a good number of areas for you today and hopefully give you a good value add. We have a lot of advisory services. There's 85 different units of advisory services that we have. But I do want to mention that in my role, I work predominantly in our private bank and then with key financial advisors, those that have clients that fit that profile. And a unique component in Wells Fargo is they always want the relationship to stay with someone, and that's generally your financial advisor that will engage you. So Wayne will be your go-to and conduit because we talk about a lot of different services that are available, so he can, in follow-up, give you a lot of other information. I want to talk a little bit today about trends, about some of the demographics, about some of the things that we see out there on a daily basis that impact you and your business. So not to talk about a lot of statistics, but I have some. Not so much for statistics, but so that you don't become one. And we're going to try to share some ideas of things that you can think about of how important these circumstances are that you're engaged with now and how you can look and maybe view them going forward. I do speak to a lot of different groups, physicians and attorneys and the like, but I do find that with businesses, there's always one common denominator, and that is your business is very personal. And you will find that in most cases, the things that we see that impact the business are not always just the business themselves, but it's everything around the business. It's health. It can be partnerships. It can be divorces. It can be disabilities, being sick, injured. All of these things are very personal and play a big role in the impact of your overall business. So recently, we look at a lot of demographics. Trust Estates Magazine gives us a lot of good data that's current. So I want to share some of that personal stuff and how that might then segue into how that might transition into the business. 57% of the respondents that they surveyed said the primary reason that they looked at planning in their business was to avoid family chaos. You'd think it would be so many other things than that, right? But it's the family chaos component. Over half were 50 to 69 years old. So we have a big emerging boomer generation, and these things are starting to come in play. There are a lot of generational shifts now. Especially subject to businesses that were developed, and I heard a lot of entrepreneurial stories last night where it might have been the grandfather from World War I and then dad from World War II, and then the generation took that over. We're finding that the demographics show that the new generations might not want to take that business over. So it's a whole different dynamic shift. They don't want to do it. They're not going to do it. So what do we do now then? We might have to make other considerations because we're not seeing this generational shift in the transitions of the businesses. Those that are in the high net category, David Crow asked me to just touch on this a little bit about estate taxes and estate planning and how that might come into the government and the regulation. But only 26% of the respondents that we surveyed had taken any action to do any element of gifting the amount of the annual exclusion that's available to be able to gift over to the next generation, which is now about $5.5 million, almost $11 million with a couple, and only 26% of people are taking advantage of that. And that's very impactful. To be able to give a gift now, remove the future appreciation potential of what could fall into your estate is significant. So much so that the government now is really looking to do away with valuation discounting to the small business owners and family limited partnerships. We've been able to get legitimate discounts over the years for lack of marketability, lack of control, minority interest. Sometimes the attorneys can legally get appraised and get effective 30% and 40%. You put that on a $20 million number, that's some really serious issue. Anything then over $11 million is taxed right now, with the highest estate tax rate at 45%. The Democrats' proposal, and this is what David wanted me to mention, he said, "Do you know the proposal?" I said, "Certainly do. Where are we if we go perhaps into a Democratic mode?" They're looking to try to deunify the credit for both gift and estate tax, where now they're simultaneous, and take us back to a $3.5 million level and an amount of up to 65%. But I also want you to know that even where we're at now at $11 million, if you're beyond that, there are significant elements. The Republican platform, Donald says he'd like to do away with it. But we don't know whether he has the capacity to just do away with it, because there's congressional, there's Senate. We think there's going to be a lot of negotiation to that. And when I entered the business, it was a $600,000 exemption. We're now at $11 million. So I just want to share with you that estate taxes first came into play in Rome 400 AD, and it was a tax on estates. So you want to be aware that that is an onerous situation that we have. We don't know where it's going to go forward, but planning can come into play, because you can still do some valuation discounts. There are ways that you can do gifting and remove future appreciation potential through family limited partnerships to get it into your children's name or your family's name and get it out of your estate. So you want to be conscious that there's a lot of opportunity there. And those are some of the services that we provide, is trying to create those types of strategies. I want to talk a bit, too, about the personal element, too, because some of these statistics, they just blow me away. American College Wealth Magazine, over 50% of adult Americans have no will. That always tells me there's something wrong. We just worked with a gentleman who, he started at $20 million, but we found out he was really worth $60 million, but he had no will. So that kind of indicates to me, well, there must be a reason for that, okay? And the reality of the reason for that was because he had a second marriage, and the children from both sides just couldn't stand one another. So they really didn't know how to allocate that without breaking apart that family. They needed some help. They needed some guidance. It's very emotional. It's very personal. But what was more interesting, because I always talked to both husband and wife, and I said, is there anything you'd like to say, Ann? And she says, you know, I got a good question. She says, we were married in Tijuana in 1987, because that's where we got married. And I always wondered if that was a legal marriage. And Bill said, yeah, I wondered that too. And I thought, my goodness, what have we opened up, right? So it turned out we had to have some of the estate attorneys reach out to the Tijuana Mexican consulate and do an investigation, because rules change down there all the time. And in a certain province, the laws will change. Well, they came back and they evaluated, and they said for U.S. purposes and in the period of time in the province that they were married in, the likelihood is that they don't have a legal marriage. So you can only imagine, $60 million bucks, the kids don't like one another on either side, there is no will, and what are we going to do? So they did get married 2 years later. It took that long to straighten that out. So it doesn't matter what level you're on in this room, without a will, sometimes there might not be a way. And they say that even if a will was drafted, and I'll say this for trust too, even if it was a year old, it may not accomplish what you've got. So frequently we tell people what their documents say, and they say, no, that's not what I wanted. Well, it's truly what you have. So there isn't a lot of good estate planning work that's done. We're in a litigious society these days. More often we see distribution to the children at ages of majority. So the typical 25, one-third, 35, if my kid's not good by then, I don't know what I'm going to do. Well, the average inheritance is spent in less than 3 years. We can keep the assets within the trust and maybe have a co-trustee in the family and make sure that they can get whatever they need, but a distribution isn't forced. So a personal injury attorney, and there's a liability suit, sees that maybe 70% of the assets are going to be distributed. They can withhold that. They can negotiate that. We can incentivize trust for morals and values. We can match distributions to their children's earned income. My wife and I have done that with one of ours, because he's a brilliant genius, but he delivered pizzas just recently. And we don't want him to just wait and have money that he might not be able to handle effectively. So review the wills, even review the trusts. If you have none, then you need to consider that. As many as 43% of adult women have no life insurance. That's a staggering number to me. And one of the interesting things I read in Money Magazine, and this is the U.S. Department of Bureau of Statistics does this, is how much is the value of a mom or a partner? And what they look at is their chauffeurs, their psychiatrists, their private investigators, because they got to figure out what are the kids doing, their accountants. It's hard to put a number on that. They're valuable, right? But if you add up all these services, what's interesting is they say in 2016, the value of a mom or a partner is approximately $118,000. So think of that, business owners. If somebody meets their demise, you got to be Mr. Mom. You might not be able to effectively run that business. We look at an income multiplier on that with $10,000 a monthly income for the next 15 or 20 years. That spouse should have $1.3 million of insurance. And term insurance, you hear it on the radio, it's cheap. Okay. Having been widowed in 04, I've experienced it. I had the necessary amount for survival. I wish I had more. So it always touches us. We never know when it'll touch us. We never know from each day what might change. We didn't expect a Cat 4 when we came in the other day. Okay, so think about your partners. Think about your spouses and the values that they add. Moving toward some of the business statistics, we look at a core segment. This is 2016 from what's called the Life Insurance Marketing Research Association. Of 650,000 businesses, about 350 of them have no succession planned. There's just literally nothing in place. Why? Well, because of a lot of the emotion and people don't know what to do. And that was a core segment, and I think a lot of you represent the room because it says those ages were between 35 and 64. By 2017, it's estimated that 40% of businesses and owners expect to retire. So there's going to be a significant transition of ownership. Less than half of those expect to retire in 5 years and have selected a successor. Do you have a successor? One of the trends is we're seeing there might be a business glut coming into the market because everybody's going to be wanting to sell their business because they don't have anybody to succeed. Sometimes you need to evaluate it today. Maybe the best time might be to sell is now. And at times we can help assess and recommend those things. Nearly a third of family businesses have no estate plan beyond a will, and only 53% experience that they have an understanding of the estate tax issue. And even though 70% would like to pass it to the next generation, only 30 will be successful to the next generation. Here's another better statistic. The 30% that succeed are twice as successful as the parent. So which one's your child? Can you determine that now? I just recently was involved in a transaction. It was a window business started by the grandfather in a garage, and it was just sold for $50 million last year. Hurricane impact windows in Florida. So which one might the child be? And I talked to Bob about this last night. Is that child that you might want to have take over the business at 25? Maybe they're not mature. Maybe they're not capable now. But if a management company came in and they appointed a COO for the CFO and trained and developed that child for just 5 more years, it could be twice as successful. But we have to have those resources. And it's hard for us to do that because, quite frankly, we're running businesses. Buy-sell agreements, I might touch on just in a little bit, but one more is in regards to buy-sell. This is it's a sad statistic, but what are the odds of somebody meeting their demise in a partnership prior to age 65, and we have three owners that are 35, 40, 45, and 50, it ranges from 32 to 40%. 40% likelihood that one of them could meet their demise, even in younger ages. So these are real circumstances that you have to address. What is the buyout? When are they bought out? Is it death only? Is it death or disability? Is it death, disability, or retirement? So some overwhelming circumstances there. There are really five key components to business succession, and I'm going to try to touch on each of them briefly. But they're business transition and exit planning, business valuation, wealth transfer, retirement planning, and then retaining our key employees. And we can chat about that. So this is likely to be the most single important decision, your business, that you'll ever make in your lifetime. Do I keep or sell my business? When? How? Some people are just have a personal identity to it. They don't want to retire. They want to do this. Maybe the spouse might want to sell it out, but the husband or other spouse doesn't want to give it up. Very emotional type of decisions that are made. And I think that's why 70% have no plan, because it's just so darn personal. It's going to impact your family, your employees, your partners, all those spouses. So a lot of times we got an owner that will say, I want to sell, but I don't even know what I have. And think of the reaching of that. It's not just the business. It's the business with equipment and assets and real estate, patents, intellectual property. I'm blown away by your technology. I had no idea. He tells me I'm going to go talk to some soil and mulch people. I said, okay. And then I start digging into what you all are about. It's just relatively amazing. I'll never go into Home Depot and be the same again, right? So thank you for that vivid memory recall that I'll have. So it's never too early to review these areas, okay? So I want to say, what if next week you get an unexpected offer and it sounds like a whopper? Have you done the math? Do you have your keep versus a sell analysis done? Are you prepared to even show what you have? Are the books in order? Have you put your buyer's hat on? And have you looked at what it's really worth? And what would a buyer truly pay? So these exercises, just alone, even if you keep it, it would be good to know that the family would even know what they were keeping. So the business transfer and exit planning is very significant. Business valuations. We got to get a buy sell, we got to have evaluation. Trying to understand what that business is really worth and getting this evaluation not only affects a buy sell, but it could be new investors, premature death, disability, crafting the buy sell, a buyout, gift tax consequences. Had a case not long ago where they agreed, it looked great, it was a buy sell, it was $2 million, but they didn't realize the IRS could come in and do a valuation too. So the inheriting party, they got their share, but they got their estate tax bill with it because it was worth so much more. We were told by an advanced markets attorney last week there's a case where the valuation on the buy sell was agreed upon years ago for $500,000. The guy died, the business worth $18 million. I said to Bob, I bet you there's some arguments that are going to be going on there, right? How long might that thing get caught up, okay? So with valuation, they're always going to look at first, you hear this, somebody said to me, all my guys say to me is EBITDA, right? Is earnings before interest, taxes, and depreciation. That's where you start, because those are some real values. Second component is retaining key employees. And I just want to talk about how you structure the benefits to your key employees is significant. Excuse me, bear with me a second. We're in competitive environments. There's a high premium to recruit and keep the right people. Whether you transition your plan and allow the employees to own and have ownership, there are opportunities for you to be able to get substantial discounts, get great liquidity with ESOPs. And we involve ourselves in those particular areas. But the thing that I want to leave you, and this is just a starting point, there is a Prudential, and we have a lot of resources from a lot of companies, a Prudential brochure in your packages, okay? And I included two areas in there about employees and another one that says retirement plan summary, and there were not going to be no test on this today, but what a great explanation of what is defined benefit, what is defined contribution, profit sharing, 401k, how you could integrate these types of retirement plans, and are you taking advantage of yourself? Should you be putting more away for your own particular retirement? So this is a nice brochure to peek at. And then the Prudential one is an introduction to insurance strategies, and we're not going to talk about product here today, but this is a great piece for you to look at business continuation, executive compensation, retirement security, buy-sell agreements. You know, the difference, do I get a cross-purchase or an entity? Right, cross purchase, you get a step up in the basis, an entity, the company owns it. Is the buy sell aligned with the entity because the corporation owned the insurance but the buy sell was personal? Now I don't have to be obligated. These are the real life circumstances that can occur. Executive compensation, there are ways that you can retain your key employees. I want to tell you a quick little story about a guy named Ricky who I learned to know because I helped him do a non-qualified deferred compensation arrangement. And he was going to selectively key out five people, and he was going to give them a substantial bonus so that if they stayed with him and they met the gold line, they had the money, he had a successful business, and he didn't ever want anybody to compete against him, so we put a non-compete agreement in. So I'm doing all this work in the middle. He says, you want to know why I'm doing this? I said, no, I just thought you were a nice guy. He says, well, I am. But let me tell you the big reason why I'm doing this. He says, back 10 years ago, I was a key person for a major plastering company, and we do all the auto dealerships. And he told me if I got this project in, because they get a lot of money if they can get it in before time and get it in under budget, these contractors with these auto dealerships, a huge amount of money, I'm going to give you a big bonus, okay? He's thinking $50,000, right? So the thing got done before the new year. It's just Christmas. Ricky gets his check. He opened it up. He said, they call me Croc. Croc, I thought I was Clark Griswold on Christmas vacation, and I got my Jelly of the Month Club because it was $5,000. Next week into the new year, he walked out. Everybody walked out with him. There was no non-compete agreement. Ricky is now the biggest plastering company in our area, okay, and bankrupted the company that he walked out on. So these things can be really important, right? Retaining and attracting your key personnel, getting non-compete agreements in place. So this booklet talks a bit about that, some of the different types of arrangements that you can do, some of the life insurance funding strategies and the purposes for them, some other considerations. And then in the back of this is a very basic discovery piece that's carbon copied. And your relationship manager, Wayne's giving you a prepaid postage envelope. So if you want to just talk about this stuff more, and we can get into five-page buy-sell planning questionnaires and mergers and acquisitions and things, but I just hit a few, right? The business has been valued by an appraiser. The key managers can meet my challenges. They're capable of running this business in the event I'm not here through death or sickness. We've got plans in place. I have determined how and when I will leave this business. Yes, no, not sure, not applicable. So check that out, send it in, and we can continue the chat further. So we're giving those two to you as a piece that you can take home and do a little bit of reading on. We can go in more depth and detail. Wealth transfer planning, I'm going to touch on. That's coordinating the business with the family. How are we going to transfer this wealth effectively, the way I want it, the way it won't come apart? The average inheritance is spent in less than 3 years. That's a real statistic from the National Association of Estate Planning Attorneys, and scarier, regardless of the size. I sat on a board of the Humane Society. I watched a roofer that won the lottery goes through $7 million in 3 years. And we were arguing over the million that remained with 9 other charities. So what you took a lifetime to build can be eliminated in the blink of an eye. So working with your outside advisors, with the wills, our trust services, we're big believers in co-trustee, where we don't eliminate the child, but I can tell you that's a very difficult decision to decide who is going to be my trustee. And I had a doctor recently said, you know, my father, he made me the executor and the trustee, he didn't even tell me, I just didn't, I got to practice, I got neuro. I would have gladly traded this off, please help me. And I also say when you name your children a trustee, you got to think, do they have the time, talent, or authority? The time is like that. Did he really have the time? How about the authority? Do they really have the capacity to manage assets on a fiduciary capacity and preserve that and grow that for the generations to come? And then again, with the authority, that's talent, but then the authority is who's really in charge? Because the document might say it's your son, but you know the influencing son or daughter-in-law can be impacting that with the children and the siblings. So what good is any document then? In the event that the family is going to be impacted by that. So we look at that from the beneficiary's perspective, from the business owner perspective, and from the family perspective as well. So I encourage a review. 4 common mistakes business owners make. I'll just share that to you briefly. 1 is not understanding the after-tax cash flow value that you need for retirement. Most people think they're going to get a big check. Most businesses that are of this size do not get a big check. Sometimes you got to take back financing. There's buybacks. Sometimes the company could be impacted in that transition. So have you really planned your retirement? Is it the right time to do it? Should you be looking at effectively doing estate planning around this too before you sell the business? Worst thing we have is somebody calls us up and says, I just sold my business. Oh my gosh. You just triggered $4 million in capital gains, right? So those things are substantial. So it says cash flow can actually decline post-transition. What is your retirement? Some entrepreneurs can't retire, or maybe they want to. Maybe they're tired of the employees. What's my next opportunity, and how am I going to bridge that gap in my retirement? Wayne talked about somebody, his friend's wife said to the guy, go back to work, will you?
So how is that always going to impact you? Number three is expecting an all-cash deal. The majority involves seller financing, earnouts, escrow, holdback arrangements. Meanwhile, the owner's got some cash, but they might not be getting a significant portion out over time. Excuse me for looking at my watch. I'm concerned about a cat four and my wife and my cat. Okay. So the risk for business owners are not receiving that liquidity at closing. The level of risk in terms of promissory notes, all of these impact you on whether or not you're expecting a cash deal. Mistake two, only speaking to one buyer, right? So you got an offer, you spent 6 months, you did the due diligence, and the guy says, I'm not interested, you go and you do it again, right? No competition, no real value. So it says, owner receives an offer from a competitor, pursues it, it doesn't happen, and then you do it again. Even if an unsolicited offer leads to a sale, the owner may not have the certainty whether is the price and terms right, nor will the buyer, and the lack of ability to compare that in the way of an analysis. A lot of them will have differing views of what the business are worth when you go for multiple. We've seen spreads of 40 to 75 million. Cha-ching, right? Let's compete this thing. But how do you do that? You have to have a team of advisors to do all the components of what we're talking about, because you're running the business and those trusted advisory services. Lack of preparation, that's number four. And we talked a little bit about that today. Know that we have mergers and acquisition services. We're only on the sell side. Our sweet spot is 20 to 100 million a year in revenue. So a lot of the big companies, they are in situations where that's where everybody's after. The small below that, nobody has the capacity. The uniqueness of the services that are provided through Wayne Wells Fargo Advisors is in a niche. And we know this exists, and we know that there's a market here. So we're very good at delivering some of these circumstances. But there's a laundry list here of the M&A, and I really don't want to get too deep there. Our lobbyist, he agreed, there's a politician that says, it takes a village, right? you got to have a village, right? So I think what I'm going to do is kind of wrap it up there for anybody that might have any questions. But I got to know a little bit about you all before I came, and I'm glad I did. And I was reading your producer publication, and I know you got issues too, right? There's mulch fires and right, arsenic levels and all these kinds of things. You're worrying more about that probably on a daily basis. But I thought I saw an interesting thing from one of your leaders that was written, and it's Robert Lagasse said, if I had a crystal ball, I'd know what direction to go. But since we don't, we just keep our eyes open for everything. And I think that holds true here. So I hope this has been of value to you, and hope that we can see you again. Thank you. Managed through whom?
Bank loans. So if you are a surviving spouse, you have to deal with bank loans.
They're now default. All elements of financing, lending, loans are all incorporated in every element of this as it might need to transition. Is that answering your question? Or?
What advice do you give?
Four. You're in default with a loan, and who died?
The partner.
I think that's beyond my pay grade, but I think those are the types of things that really need to be immediately negotiated, and they're going to be based a lot on the merit of the company, the circumstances, the value, the ability to refi and restructure loans. Wayne, do you have any other comments you could lend to with that? You're welcome.
Everything that we do based on our relationship with Bob and JC, particularly for this group, advisor running a practice with partners like him and other partners within our organization. So you, I don't know if it's so germane to the whole group, but you'll give us specifics or a call on my business card.
Yeah.
We're not going to be open on Friday, but again, there's something called Hurricane Matthew.
Yeah.
But we will be back on Monday, or you can fill out, any of you can fill out that return envelope if you have the answer.
We manage real estate. We restructure loans. There are a lot of additional services in that lending capacity.
Well, I think for this group, because I found myself in the situation, mm-hmm. point it out and bring up the question, because the first thing you're faced with is loans and
everything. Mm-hmm.
And the second thing is you have to find the trust, even if it's for benefit.
Mm-hmm. Great advice.
When you have a trust, you mm-hmm. need a trustee.
Right.
When do you need to have a trust protector?
I'm dealing with a trust protector now.
Yeah.
And I kind of cross over with them a little bit and say, that's a good question. You know, what is that real value that they add? One in particular, this family's worth $50 million. The trustee is the husband, so he doesn't know that he truly has that full capacity. Because he didn't want to elect at this point in time a corporate trustee that has all that full fiduciary capacity. So he has bought on a trust protector to manage him to make sure that he's got oversight on what his fiduciary capacity is.
Right.
How that's charged, and we don't do those services here as trust protectorate. We're fully trust services, but I've had that experience that I can share. As you should be.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Yeah. And we probably have some people in our trust area that could give you an unbelievable amount of guidance and situations that center around those circumstances. Yes, sir.
As you sell an asset, a company, or a part of a company, how do you protect yourself up front to know whether it's capital gains or ordinary income? And then the second part of that is, as you get a down pay, you might get 40% or 50% the rest over time.
Right.
How do you make sure that that rest of that money, all of it, is taxed as capital gain? When do you pay that tax?
Yeah.
All up front, or as you get it?
Go ahead.
Repeat that.
Questioning in the transition, how do you determine all the tax components that go around the sale as to capital gain, timing, ordinary income, and things of that nature? We can get you the full outlay for business advisory services, but we have these people that are on staff, so to speak, with valuations, all the analysis that can be created, with just extremely brilliant people that can factor that out for you. And from a service perspective, they can do that on so many levels. They can come in and isolate it, and with what you want to know, they can do that for fee for service for that component and give you your answer. It could go from that all the way to management of CEOs. So all of that does get evaluated.
And they would do an initial review and proposal without you engaging us.
Yeah, they're pretty
zero
good at.
Is a number that Bob likes as far as
yeah, yeah, they're good at doing a quick snapshot on things and then tell you where you may be. But all of that's always disclosed.
That's a great question.
It is a great question.
Have you been involved in employee purchases of companies?
In ESOPs?
Yes.
They're hard to get done. They're very expensive to do. Honestly, I've done one, and it was before I was here. We're right now in a repurchase obligation with one that's existing, and there may be another, and that's what we're seeing emerge are the ESOPs that didn't do all of what they should have done. Some of them aren't leveraged, and they have a capacity, especially in these low interest rates, to make leveraged ESOPs. Leveraged ESOPs are most of the ESOPs that are being done now because of the low interest rate environment. But you've got to take that apart, and there's all sorts of analysis that goes, who are the people? What's the management capacity? What's the outlook of the business? What's competitor? You know, there's a lot of issues in that. And that's a qualified plan. So then you throw all the ERISA, PBGC, and all qualified plan elements on top of that as part of the overall ownership of the company. That's probably one of the most complicated subject matters of what we involve ourselves in. Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm only involved on the insurance component side of that, so.
However, we have the capacity to have.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. Yeah, and these are people that are all over the country. There's about 5 regional segments that are broken down. So as Wayne said, doesn't matter if you're in California, doesn't matter if you're in Florida. This is pretty much across the country. Great questions. If there are no further, let me just say one more. Okay. Thank you all so much. Thank you.